I'm sitting in a closet and I'm not coming out.
Hi there. The introduction. Okay, to be quite brutally honest, I did come out of the closet. Why was I in the closet? Well, first of all, I thought podcasting has a lot to do with audio quality. And I had a hunch that the audio quality would be best in our closet because it's a room that is very small and it has a lot of cushy things in there. So a lot of jackets, a lot of, I don't know, stuff that just otherwise flies around in the apartment all day. And yeah, but then I found out that it's almost the same quality as speaking just into my headphone microphone. So my podcasting studio has moved out of the closet, so I came out of it. And I am now reporting live from my desk at home. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this new thing that's starting right now. The name is regarding. Hi there. And it's a podcast. It's a new format that I'm trying out. And the for who and the why and the how often is more or less the focus of this first episode. Also, maybe why English. Maybe the easiest new thing or the easiest information is how frequently. My aim is to update you on projects that I'm doing every other week. Which just simply gives you the opportunity to keep up with my projects and my news and maybe find one or two interesting aspects in it. And in many, many cases, there will be, well, in fact, I listed some like 6 or 7 projects that I wanted to discuss with you where I'm genuinely curious about what you think. Now, this whole topic of you, who are you, who are you? the target group of this podcast is predominantly, if not almost solely, my mentees at University of St. Gallen. University of St. Gallen has a great mentoring program, and I'm super excited to be part of it and participating in it as a mentor, because, to be once again quite honest, I think that there is much to learn for me there, and not only in terms of just simply learning from you, my mentees, but also about learning from how to try and become a better, the mentoring perspective of a leadership personality, so to speak. I mean, we're speaking so much about being leaders or having leadership capabilities and abilities and so on and so forth, but it's actually quite easily said and very difficultly done to adopt and acquire some kind of leadership capabilities and leadership also qualities, not only because it's a very difficult thing to try and learn, but also because there are just so many different approaches to leadership, and you might go to one job and learn one type of leadership and then the other job and then you learn another type of leadership. For example, the first job might be the drill instructor type of leadership, the second one might be the laissez-faire leadership, and all of these other different formats that you might not really consciously learn, but rather be exposed to, and then you just pick it up, and just more or less by pure happenstance. And I kind of made the decision to, should I ever acquire any kind of like first experiences of leadership, and I take this word quite seriously, then I would like it to be not the drill instructor type, not the, I don't know, bean counter type, not the, I don't know, all of the 50,000 different other interpretations of what leadership might be, but rather the perspective of a mentor as a leader, a person who can ideally empower others by either inspiring them and or giving them insight, helping them reflect, sometimes challenging them, sometimes consoling them, sometimes, somehow getting your people, so to speak, not in a possessive form, but the people that you feel responsible, at least to a certain degree, for, to empower them and to make them be more successful. And I don't mean that as a hollow saying or a greenwashing term, so to speak, but that's kind of what I hope, once again, should I ever come into the position of really being tasked to be leading a great group of people, then I would like to have learned that. So that's my path, so to speak, that I'm participating in the mentoring program. And so that's my predominant perspective. And that's my, when I'm thinking about topics that might be interesting, I hope that they will be interesting to my mentees. However, as I interpret the whole topic of being a mentor and working with mentees, I kind of can immediately expand this circle to also include just my friends, because not necessarily, I mean, being a mentor is not readily and easily equated to being a friend, because being a mentor probably is a little bit more instructive and a little bit more, I don't know, it shares more perspectives, and it's the whole relationship resides on the understanding that the mentee actually wants something from the mentor somehow, or that he or she has some kind of a need for reflection or for joint discussions on this or that topic. And for friends, of course, it's a different setting somehow, but I think the best friends the closest friends that I have, I usually consider mentees to me, because they kind of, implicitly provide me with some complementary insight or capabilities that I don't have, I'd like to learn, I find inspiring, and that's just, I guess, how friendships forms. Also, that there's some kind of a reciprocity about what you can learn from the other person and how the whole experience feels. So, yeah, that's more or less my broader range of the target group. And the third use, so to speak, and this is also why I'm speaking English, I'm going to be speaking a lot about projects that I'm working on. And I would like to use the opportunity to practice speaking about these projects. And commonly, if I'm going to speak about this professionally, I might be speaking about it in English. So I'd like to also keep it in the language that I'm going to be using mostly in terms of presenting my work. And at the same time, because I'm presenting to people of different languages, I would also make this podcast be readily understandable and available to those people who are not speaking German, rather speaking any other language. And then speak English is just the lowest common denominator, so to speak, not to be too critical of English, but it's just, I think it doesn't really need much more explanation than that. So the whole idea, even though it's a podcast, my initial targeted audience is exactly 7 people. It's my 2 mentees from the very first year I was a mentor, my 2 mentors from the second year, and my 3 mentors of the third year that just started. And that's also why this new first episode of this new podcast comes out right now. Because we had a kickoff just 1.5 weeks ago, and we had the workshop to the kickoff of the mentoring program. So every year there's a new opportunity to onboard new mentees. And then there's a big kickoff event with about, I don't know, probably 300, 400 people attending. Every year there's about right now 550 different pairs of mentor-mentee relationships. And that happened Wednesday, week before last. And then directly after that, there's usually a kickoff workshop on what the expectations are of mentees towards the mentoring program and of mentors towards the mentoring program. So that's more or less the gist of it, the abstract to this new project. I'm so glad that I didn't stay in the closet. I mean, not only with the with the podcast, but also, I mean, that closet gets hot quickly. And the added bonus of having super duper stellar audio is really only imagined, because sometimes, I don't know, you probably can relate. Sometimes if you really make an effort and it really feels weird to do something in a way because you feel like, you're putting in the effort, and then the result is not really that much better, you feel like, yeah, but you put in the effort. And I thought, you know, let's free myself from that, because I'd rather really keep up the cadence of the 2 week frequency, and rather have it in this pragmatic format, and yeah, just get going with it, so to speak. For this week, I'd like to share some reflections on mentoring itself. And this has to do with the situation that I just told you about, the kickoff of the mentoring program. The kickoff of the mentoring program usually has very friendly and warm and instructive words from the program management, from the different institution that sponsor this management, and the different people who are linked to that. And there's also one segment of the whole program in which you would have mentees up on stage discussing in a panel how they experienced it, why they joined it, and so on and so forth. So just an experience recap to be a little bit instructive to the people who are listening in and sitting in, just simply to get them the first kind of an idea of what this mentoring program or the mentoring experience might bring to them. Because, to be quite honest, we're not educated mentors. I think mentoring is also generally not necessarily the term or the the relationship or the role that is endowed upon by, I don't know, some special education. Coaching is, I think, to coach, at least at our university, but also I think beyond that, the whole topic of becoming a coach can really benefit from having a more or less formalized education in that subject of how to coach, because it entails much more applied psychology than mentoring would. Mentoring is even a more applied approach to just facilitating exchange, maybe some experience exchange, but also just supporting people in reflecting their options. And so with that regard, it's a little bit of a lower bar to work and act as a mentor, even though it's, you know, it's kind of what you make of it. If you're a very engaged mentor, of course, you can also work your way into the depth and the breadth of the field. And but still, coaching is the stuff that I would at least understand to be something to be learned. And but still, so imagine having a large university room full of 300, 400, maybe 450 people. And say 75% of those people do this mentoring or being a mentee for the first time. So the question truly is, how is it going to work? What are we going to do? That's what this panel was for. And we had two people who were, or four people who were joining the program manager, one mentor of working in medicine, working in a hospital, and a young student who's working to attain her medical degree, and my mentee, and me. Yay. And I mean, in preparation, especially if you're standing in front of a large crowd, of course you're kind of like reflecting on what you're going to say, even though it was for this format seriously really not that much necessary. But still, I was driving from Munich to St. Gallen, and I was reflecting on what mentoring, kind of taught me, at least in the last year or maybe in the last 2 years. And what I found was that there are actually a couple of things that I expected beforehand to be different. And the first one was, for example, that you have the general idea of, for example, that the mentor is always the older one, and he's going to imbue his experience onto the younger person, the mentee. Other things are that, for example, the mentoring program at our university usually push this idea of the mentee is in the driving position, and the mentee has to define what he or she wants. And also all the impulses have to come from the mentee, and so on and so forth. And I have written down six things and six working hypotheses that at least I came to find first evidence for, and I want to share them with you. The first thing is, and this really relates to this whole idea of traditionally the mentor being seen as the more experienced and the person to be able to communicate guidance and maybe help making decisions and so on and so forth, and the mentee being the inexperienced one and not knowing their way around and so on and so forth. And that would generally lead to this understanding of the mentee asks and the mentor tells. And I have found that this is usually, I mean, it's a very basic and fundamental understanding that this whole idea of communication takes this one-way approach from the mentor to the mentee. And from my perspective, it doesn't really work this way for several reasons, because this approach is geared towards the consequences, in terms of the mentor tries to create, by sharing his experience, positive consequences for the mentee. That's quite a tall order, because usually the mentor doesn't really know the life reality of the mentee. I mean, of course, we learned the perspectives of our mentees, but there's only so much depth to this exchange. For some relationships, it goes quite deep, and it's also quite, in some relationships, it might be easier to understand where the challenges, where the problems, where the, I don't know, maybe also fears come in. But for others, it really isn't, because, I mean, we've all been to university. Let's say 60% to 70% of the time, I myself wasn't really aware of, okay, what's bugging me right now, or what's going good, what's going, I don't know, what's going mediocre, what should I do, where should I go, and so on and so forth. I mean, in many cases, the world, be it academic, professional, or just own life, is just not full of red exclamation marks of there is a challenge, there is a challenge, there is a challenge, but just a lot of yellow question marks in terms of, I don't know, is this good, is this bad, is this going to lead somewhere or not? So it's kind of difficult for a mentor to say, ha ha ha, I figured it out, your problems are A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and you're going to do, for A, you're going to do that, for B, you're going to do that, and so on and so forth. So that's just, I mean, of course, if I put it like that, everybody would probably also agree that nobody would expect that, but kind of subconsciously, wouldn't it be awesome if we could? But we can't. So the first takeaway or working hypothesis for mentoring, at least from my personal experience, is that it's not as useful to try and tell answers or try to guess challenges, but rather to share own experiences to create trust. Because if we cannot really work on the consequential bit in terms of we're trying to make sure that we add to the system by giving recommendations and then come up with great solutions for our mentees, it's much more rewarding to look towards the antecedents and rather look at what is necessary for mentees to be open and to feel an environment in which they can actually share their experiences. And not in every time there's the perfect clear-cut challenge that just needs fixing. It's just about, you know, how do you experience that? And sometimes maybe an open and carefully listening ear of a mentor can identify in just regular, telling of what's going how and so on and so forth. Sometimes we can tell patterns in terms of, okay, it's now the fifth time that you're telling me about something that didn't really work out, but you don't really mind. So from the student's perspective, it might be or from the mentee's perspective, it might be a situation, it's not really a pain for me right now, so I wouldn't even really bring it up. It's not a challenge. But a mentor might say, especially in a situation where you have frequent exchange and where the mentee also doesn't really mind telling you, that didn't work out, or that did work out, but I really hated it. So really these things that sometimes don't really make much sense in your own mind. If you can create a trusting environment in which people can just say stuff and try to discuss topics that they're themselves not really sure about, and that kind of takes a lot of trust to do that. Trust is needed, and building trust is needed, and building trust usually comes along with the more transparent you can afford to be as a mentor, the better, because then you can more or less. I like to speak in analogies and metaphors. It's like if you just have this little dusty out of town road with a lot of potholes and a lot of sharp bends and twists and not really maintained very well. And if that's the basis of your trust, not a lot of cars are going both ways. But if you have the opportunity to gradually build up a kind of highway between you and your mentee, in which it's perfectly easy, perfectly safe, very efficient, and also high capacity to exchange and to have traffic going both ways, then you have much greater chance of identifying those patterns that are that might be useful to discuss for your mentee. So the title for that would be Share for Trusts. The second findings would be a little bit of an extension to that, because if you've built an environment in which sharing is awesome awesome, but it shouldn't be painful, and it might even be fun just to tell a little bit about even the quirky and the weird and the sometimes even very profound and very deep things. And everybody feels like, okay, also for me as a mentor, it's important to not to be regarded by my mentee as, ooh, he's always the guy with the weird stuff. But that you have a common understanding of how, more or less speaking about most things, can result in a useful reflection on them. Then that's a great basis. That's, as I said, the more or less the highway between both your cities. But then there's this one thing which I highlighted, the problem of you do not necessarily always have these three big red exclamation points, and you feel like, okay, I have my challenges cut out very clearly for me, and I just have to fix them. Usually it's the question of you just have a big cloud of yellow question marks. And the problem is you don't really know what the challenge is. You don't really know what you should also define as the challenge, because some challenges, I don't know, like a broken leg, that's something that you can easily point to. That's a very mechanical challenge, so to speak, and which just needs to heal. And you have to, I don't know, rest your leg on a chair or something. But especially when you're in an environment like a university where you have a lot of different opportunities to interpret yourself, and you end up having maybe plausibly not 3, but 10 or 15 different ways of interpreting yourself, challenges might not present themselves by like a pain in the foot, but they might be something that you need to define. And that requires that you're becoming aware of it. And that is something that, especially in very traditional mentoring relationships, where the mentor might say, you know, students just have to come to me with their challenges. That's very difficult work. Just simply identifying. It takes a lot of experience, and it takes a lot of not only experience in self-reflection, but it also takes a lot of experience in terms of framing a challenge so that another party can understand it, and also picking the right time to voice it, and to having enough having enough steam and having enough confidence and having enough also trust to voice this challenge. So my working hypothesis there is to try and do this myself, to try and identify what my challenges right now might be, and to discuss these challenges with my mentees, just in order to give them an example on how challenges might be captured and how they might be shared. Now, one thing that is quite interesting with that, and this is once again one of the many returns, so to speak, that are being generated by working as a mentor, is that it's challenging for me too. I have to learn it too. And it's kind of difficult, especially if things are generally running quite smoothly, or, I mean, everybody usually likes to think and believe that this is the status quo, because it's very calming and it's very nice and relaxing. But being keenly aware of which kind of roadblocks are holding you back, and which kind of opportunities you're right now squandering because you're always coming back to the same behavioral patterns, takes a lot of reflection. And this is something that, you know, it's a good challenge for yourself, and it's a good challenge, not necessarily a challenge, but it's a good instruction for your mentee, because he or she will be able to, if they're somewhat attentive and if they're somewhat also interested in just sharing and discussing challenges and learning how to do this, they can just simply, not necessarily copy, but learn from you. So that's the number two. The third is really one of these points that are very much connected to us being mentors in St. Gallen and working with a mentoring program in St. Gallen. St. Gallen is a, let's say, 75%, 80% management business school. And as such, we're quite conservative in terms of not necessarily politically conservative and not necessarily completely devoid of innovation or anything, but generally because people are aware that they're visiting a good school, that they've made a choice to study something that is quite likely to land them a good and interesting and fulfilling job, and that the only thing is that they simply do need not to screw up to end up somewhere which might be desirable. this leads to a general sense of, you know, let's not rock the boat too much. And in the environment of let's not rock the boat too much, every time your little train, which might be your career or your academic progress or whatever, every time this little train is on its rails, it feels wonderful, because when you have rails, you don't have a steering wheel. You do not really have the opportunity to screw up too much when you're on rails. I mean, of course, you have to make your individual challenges, you have to make your individual examinations, and so on and so forth. But it's really not that scary, because the thing trundles along at its pace, and that's more or less about it. The problem and the challenge really comes when the rails end, and you end up in a big free and open space, and you don't really know what comes next. So, especially in conservative environments, like maybe many business schools, you might end up with a general sense of the more confined you are to a program, the better, because you know how to perform. But once the program ends, and you have to self-interpret your role and your path, and you have to find your path, and you have to, I don't know, maybe you want to work in one direction, but it's kind of the question whether you will have enough steam and enough courage to really try that out, because maybe it also feels to you like a little bit of a pipe dream, and you learn from a lot of conservative people around you that pipe dreams usually don't come to pass, and that rather go for the realistic route and rather go for the rails that are set out in front of you. So many people want to contract you to do very traditional, very valuable, very important, but also very much standardized work, that this idea of making something of your potential that is non-standard becomes much less appealing. And with that regard, I've learned, or at least my working hypothesis is, that mentors should not only communicate their experience, because traditionally, I mean, especially because we're older, for me, I'm usually like, let's say 10, 12, 15 years older than my mentees. For older mentors, it's much older. And some might be in their, I don't know, 50s, in their less 40s, more 50s, some 60s. So really people who've seen a lot, but also coming from a time where the rails were even much longer, much stronger, and served even less the opportunity of trying to interpret your own path on a field that is not necessarily studded with rails that just take you a defined place. So my appeal would be to interpret mentoring not only as a way of saying, you know, that's how you're being a good little locomotive, and that's how you go particularly fast, or that's how you get a lot of, I don't know, coal, but rather to inspire to use the freedom that we have. Because any type of education that you generate, or that you accumulate, should generate not more rails and more standardized follow-up programs and engagements, but should empower you to explore freedom as you see fit. If you see fit that you want to go from one set of rails to another one, because that gets you forward, more power to you. Why not? But nowadays, especially with a changing world of work, we should also be in a position that young people shouldn't necessarily feel like because they studied A, they now have to do career B. Because they did study program A, they now have the opportunity to do anything between B and X, Y, and Z. So, yeah, I kind of feel that that mentoring really needs to also, at least also, I'm not going to even say that it's predominantly this way, even though I personally feel, for me at least, should be predominantly, but it's definitely not for every mentor and not for every mentoring relationship. It should at least be part of the thing somehow. My working hypothesis number four is that mentoring takes impulses from both. The whole idea behind that is our mentoring program highlights and emphasizes the necessity of mentees to, well, to push the ball forward, so to speak, and to always be in the position to drive the conversation. From my experience, that's not always possible, because at least at pretty demanding schools, students have so much on their boards, and also the programs like a mentoring program is to such a degree optional that just so many different activities and environments in which the student is also not the strong partner, the strong actor, but also the weak and the subjected actor, so to speak, because the university will always be have the authority over the student. Any kind of a club might probably have the authority over a student. Family might have authority over a student. I don't know. There are so many things that students today engage in, subject themselves to, and afterwards are in a position that they have to deliver something. And if mentoring relies too much on students to generate input for the mentoring relationship, or at least let's say if they rely solely on that, it's probably not going to work out, because I mean students are in a position in so many ways to be the servant of a process, so to speak, that it's simply unrealistic to expect that. So from my perspective, once again, it should be a bilateral stream of impulses, and not only out of, you know, out of pure goodness, because we want our students to succeed. One great motivation to be an active mentor is that you're not going to get anything out of it either if the dialogue doesn't really come to pass. Then it's really just a paper tiger. If you're having mentees and there is no dialogue going on, then you can also have no mentees. That would be the easiest path. So if you have mentees, the question really is, how do you get an exchange or support an exchange? It's definitely not you who's going to need to be the showmaster, but it's also going to be you to be, yeah, be needing to contributing to the whole thing, because otherwise it's also, I mean, being seen from the mentee's point of view, it's a pretty unattractive position to be in. I mean, for us, the program runs over 2 years and then open-ended. But at least to be over 2 years in a position to always be told, you know, be glad that you're having the more experienced player because he or she is super busy and he or she will still speak to you, and you may ask them, you should ask them, and you should always be thankful. Jesus Christ, I wouldn't ask that person one thing. I would just say, you know, let's just not do it. I mean, if it's such a trouble and if it's so uninteresting to you to not also every once in a while, I don't know, get the ball rolling from your side, it just would be a super unattractive thing for me as a student, which might also relate to the situation that I'm not that far away from being a student. I mean, I completed my PhD in 2016, and so that's 3 years ago now, I was technically able to also get a mentor then. I wasn't really looking for a mentor back then. I had too much, I had too much to do is such a weird thing because, I mean, I think it would have done a whole lot of good for me to have had a mentor, but I was not in a position to realize that it would have been valuable to me. And I was so like caught up with my own stuff that I wouldn't even really consider it. But that's, like, I guess, one of these, you know, the woodchuck not realizing that his axe has grown dull and that having a sharper axe might be actually be helpful. Now, my fifth working hypothesis has to do with recommendations, because that's also one of the very traditional, you know, things about mentoring. Mentors provide recommendations or support or guidance for their mentees. Now, there's this obvious problem with mentors living a different life and having a different, worldview and world experience. And even if they listen very closely and if they have a great trusting relationship with their mentees, and if the mentee shares a lot, there is still ample risk to not hit the nail on the head, but just drive down the hammer just maybe an inch left or right to it. So more or less generating recommendations that will not provide positive results for the mentee. With that regard, it's always difficult to give clear-cut recommendations. The problem with that is, of course, clear-cut recommendations feel the most useful because they're the most instructive. Should I go to City A and do my internship there, or should I go to City B and continue my studies there? It would be so helpful to have this omniscient mentor who can say, you know, it's going to be A, it's much, much more useful to you. And because it might actually give you a clear indication and just at least add to your big list of pros and cons of your individual decisions. The problem, however, is, of course, the more specific the answer is, the less reliable it might be, because it's just simply unlikely that a very specific decision that comes from outside will certainly hit all of your recommendations, especially if you take it on unreflected. At the same time, if you're being asked, should I do A or should I do B, and your mentor reflects on it and answers a little bit like Yoda would from Star Wars, in a philosophical response in terms of, I don't know, what's more important to you and where is your life leading you and so on and so forth, the mentee tends to feel like, okay, now I'm back to square one, so that doesn't really help me. It's a very high level, high context feedback, and I'm not sure whether this is actually getting me any closer to my decision. Now, all of this kind of also depends on the personality of the mentee. Some mentees have horrendous challenges in making decisions. Others don't. And at least from my experience, you can be a little bit more like Yoda for those who don't really have challenges of making decisions. And because they usually, they can take that, lemon that you give them of a feedback, so to speak, not because it would be bad to be speaking a little bit more philosophical terms or a little bit more high-flying terms, but it needs processing to become lemonade. So usually mentees who are quite apt at finding their way and they would just like discuss it one more time, they will probably do pretty good with just simply, being a little bit more high level. If you have a student who really has problems and challenges finding their own way, making their own decisions, what might be more helpful is not to say do A or do B, but rather explore scenarios and then try and help them weigh the individual and evaluate these individual scenarios in terms of what will be more rewarding to them on short term, on medium term, on long term, and so on and so forth. So more or less use the opportunity to explain the process of arriving at a reflection, so to speak. Now I'm usually one of those people who love to reflect and to make plans and the next day, just on a hunch, do exactly the opposite. And I couldn't really tell you why, but sometimes there is a quality to reflecting on a subject and just becoming extremely clear about it, which might also shift priorities that you thought you had before. Because usually, I mean, that's kind of the most useful perspective of exploring scenarios, that if you're weighing two options and you're doing it via a heuristic, so more or less allowing your brain to automatically calculate the findings, so to speak, what the choice should be, you're going to work with your general pre-canned assumptions on your priorities. So subconsciously, you're going to weigh your individual, the facets of the decision, you're coming down with B. But if you're, even if you're able to like use heuristics quite quickly and quite successfully and happily, working through decisions a little bit more systematically allows you not to reflect on the decision itself, but on how your priorities may have changed since the last time you used this set of priorities. And I mean, especially in the time between 20 and, let's say, 40, which I haven't reached yet, but there are so many different phases in there. Say, 20, you more or less just came out of your hometown and are now at university. 25, you want to start work. 30, you're feeling like, okay, now decisions start to matter. 35, you're thinking about family. 40, I don't know, you want to take the next step, or it should ideally by that time be like the fifth or the sixth step, but maybe take it to the next level, so to speak. Maybe you're looking towards, I don't know, leadership responsibility or anything. And so even only in these 20 years of life, your priorities are bound to change over only a handful of years. And if you're going by heuristics too much, you might use old priorities. And by going through this more systematically, it just helps you reflecting on your priorities. So with that regard, coming back to the original idea with the recommendations, I try as a mentor not to give recommendations. I'm saying that because I know that I'm always doing that. And sometimes it's more appropriate than other times. But usually I try to do this less and less. Because especially in situations where I'm 100% convinced that this recommendation is awesome, I need to be the most careful. But what's much more helpful is to try and assist your mentee and in reflecting on priorities. Because usually it's not really about, I don't know, whether it's A or B, because A or B is also just a way to, yeah. It's a question of needs or how do you say it? Ways and ends, so to speak. So A and B is usually the way to get to some sort of an end, but what needs reflecting usually is the end, whether the end still has the attractiveness that it may have had 2 or 3 years ago. Finally, working hypothesis number 6, try to learn. There is one, what's always being highlighted about mentor-mentee relationships is that mentor has experience, mentee doesn't, so that's the exchange relationship. I would like to put it another way around, because traditionally, or I don't know whether I should say traditionally, but it's quite common for mentees to have much more energy than mentors. During the workshop on Saturday, we heard that one of the mentors said, a lot of mentors are so experienced that they are somewhere between sarcastic and cynical about their work environment. And he loves to work with students because they're not that yet. Not necessarily to say everybody gets cynical and sarcastic about the realities of life and work and everything that's in there. But there is one, so to speak, elephant in the room with a lot of mentors. I think it's not only about sharing experience, but it's being super duper jealous of the energy that students have. And that's quite an attractive, in terms of just how you reflect on your own capabilities and what's useful and what you might be needing more of as a productive member of society, you acquire experience and you're losing energy. That's just, it's a common and realistic path. That's also why, I don't know, CEOs that are in their 50s and 60s who still appear to radiate energy are such cherished sights, so to speak, because you can really, you get the sense of, wow, that's not a common behavior or experience that I would usually have with a person his or her age. And the interesting thing about the energy about being, I don't know, early 20s or mid 20s is that you have one key capability that you also start to lose over the years. It's the speed in which you learn. And there are many examples for that. I mean, with regard to, I don't know, mathematical learning, so to speak, a lot of people say, I think there's a threshold somewhere around the year of 15, 16, 17 of the fundamental concepts. For language, people say that it's, 25 or something, that it becomes significantly more difficult. So there's a really hockey stick, so to speak, in decreasing efficiency after the year of 25 to completely learn new languages. And before it's easier, just simply because, that really sounds very, very simplistic in terms of psychology, but the way the brain works is different after 25. Obviously, I don't know exactly what I'm talking about here, but there is, you can be certain of the situation that most mentors will, in an open moment, share, not only that you have the energy and the drive and the spirit, and maybe also lacking the negative experiences that still also shape your motivation and your attitude towards the world. That's one side, but also the ability to grow. I mean, a very logical way of saying this is something that has grown loses to a certain degree the ability to grow. And mentoring really has the opportunity to, or serves the opportunity, if you want to use it as a mentor, to try and keep growing. And if you try and do something, you might as well try and do it as a, in a context that is quite challenging, in a context that is, in which you have a formidable opponent, not necessarily in terms of opponent, but just simply the yardstick is much more difficult if you're trying to compare your own learning curve with the learning curve of a, 20-something, than if you're comparing your learning curve with another 50-something. So with that regard, my working hypothesis, and I think also why I'm going to, I hope, keep going as a mentor for the foreseeable future, and hopefully for all time, is that it kind of keeps me on my toes, trying to not only empathize in terms of, yeah, I know that you're super busy, but also to try and be inspired by the speed in which you work yourself into challenges and out of challenges again. So with that regard, yeah, those are kind of my six learnings, or not really learnings yet, but yeah, I called them working hypotheses. So the first one was share for trust. It goes into the direction of it's much more important to create a foundation of trust than try and immediately get to, I don't know, helpful outcomes and success in a mentorship relationship. Trust is the first thing you need to be successful in. Otherwise, you're not going to be, I don't know, successful in much else. The second one is challenges, for example, which means if you're a mentor, try to identify your own challenges and communicate them to illustrate how you do it and how you also identify them. And I know it might be challenges that you're still struggling with, might be challenges that you kind of figured out. That's useful too, because, I mean, as long as it includes trying to get to the bottom of what it was that was holding you back. And I mean, everybody who reflects on that sentence really should come to the conclusion that that's kind of a difficult thing to do. And that's what we're asking our mentees to do every day and then come to us with the challenges. It's difficult stuff. I mean, it's, we're happy, or we're glad that you guys, mentees, are driven and have energy and have also the ability to learn quicker than we are. But it's a difficult thing. And just sharing or trying to figure it out from both sides is a useful perspective, I think. Inspire for freedom was number three. Yeah, we're so much on our rails. I mean, come on, guys. Careers, you know. I mean, the idea of the ladder. There's nothing more, yeah, I mean, if you're on the ladder, you don't have much choice. You can go up, you can go down, but there's not really any which way left or right. And there's also no way halfway up the ladder to say, no, I'm not on a ladder, I'm on a lawnmower. Or I'm standing next to a grill, or I'm sitting in a car. No, you're on the ladder. So this whole idea of inspiring that you do not necessarily have to be on that friggin' ladder. It doesn't have to feel like a ladder, and it has more options. That's, I think, a key thing to mentoring, at least from my perspective. I mean, everything here is from my perspective, so that's clear. Impulses from both, as I said, it really takes the engagement and the action from both sides to get the thing on the road, because, yeah, I mean, every mentor should come to this conclusion if they have a little bit of empathy in their bones, because it's just, you do not want to be in a relationship in which you're constantly, not only the weak, not that mentees would be weaker actors, but still perceived, mentees are still in a position to grow, and the other party is supposed to be grown. So, and you do not always want to be the person to be asking for stuff. I mean, we're most of us, we're just not geared that way and find that attractive. Recommendations are a strange thing. That was definitely one thing. Coming from the recommendations and maybe talking a little bit less about the recommendations and going more towards the idea of the priorities. Because whether it's A or B doesn't really matter that much. The question is, what do you want to achieve? And has that changed? I think that's more useful than anything else. And try to learn. Yeah. It's mentoring is a great learning opportunity, not for the mentee. That too on a great day, but it is definitely a good self-teaching and self-leadership course for mentors. As I said, I'm doing this, or I'm becoming acting in this environment, or active in this environment, because I believe that I can learn from it. And with that, my dear friends and mentees, mostly mentees, I mean, let's face it, who's going to listen to me speak to so long? For an hour, I mean, oh God. Yeah, I hope this was kind of useful. I don't know, you're probably on the treadmill somewhere or running through a forest or something. And yeah, this was the first edition, the intro to the new podcast for my mentees and friends and who else might listen in. And I'm looking forward to many interesting additional further episodes. I used to have a list with my episodes that I planned. I have like 7 different topics that I want to discuss, just off the top of my head. And I think the first run, the first season, so to speak, might be 8 to 10 episodes. And then I'm going to see, you know, how it comes out, and maybe what feedback is, and so on and so forth. So just to maybe establish a common wrap-up, if you found anything interesting to discuss, maybe you agree with some stuff, maybe you disagree with some stuff, if you find anything particularly interesting, use this as an opportunity to reflect and, yeah, connect and associate with things that are right now going on in your study, professional, or whichever parts of your life. And yeah, let's just be in touch. And I'm really looking forward to your resonance to this. Not necessarily because I'm super interested in how you like the podcast, because there's really not much to do. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm going to keep sending you this. And I'm also kind of, I mean, especially when I get started with something, I'm kind of impenetrable for feedback, at least for the first 1, 2, 3 rounds, because I just try to get the ball rolling somehow, and I have to get happy with it myself. And after that, I start to factor in more feedback and more ideas and so on and so forth. But it's really difficult to develop such a format by committee. I have to figure out what I want to do, so to speak, and this only gets, yeah, this is learning by doing, as they say, and meant with every word of it. So this is now the first episode. I'm looking forward to hearing from you whenever you find the time. I wish you a lovely first Advent Sunday. It's now December 1st, 2019. This is Rhi. Hi there, and I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Bye-bye.